From Fibush Media World Domination Headquarters in Rochester, New York, it is the Top of the Tower podcast. Maybe our last one for 2017. We'll see. We might do one next week during the holidays. In any event, I'm your host, Scott Fibush. We're going to spend most of this podcast talking about two AM stations that were in the news this week. KQV in Pittsburgh, which threatens to sign off at the end of the year if they don't find a buyer. And WMEX in Boston, which looks like it may have yet another lease on life in the hands of broadcast owner Ed Perry. We'll talk about both of those stations. First, a couple other headlines that we have been following here in the waning moments of 2017 news-wise. Getting ready, of course, for the big Northeast Radio Watch year-in-review package. You'll see that on Fibush.com beginning on Tuesday, December 26th, bright and early Boxing Day morning. As usual, we'll bring it to you in several daily installments, so keep checking back each day over the holiday week. We will bring you the year in station sales, two installments of the year in formats and people. We will bring you our top 10 stories of the year. I bet you can't guess what number one is going to be. And then, of course, the year in obituaries is how we always close things off. So that will come to you beginning on Tuesday, December 26th through Friday, December 30th, back with one final installment on New Year's Day, January 1st, and then we will have our first 2018 installment of Northeast Radio Watch ready for you bright and early in the morning on Tuesday, January 2nd, 2018. So a few headlines other than the two big stories that we're going to be talking about this week. First of all, the ongoing reshuffling of radio in Boston took a few more big chapters this week. iHeart now has officially taken over operation. The deals haven't fully closed yet with all the swaps that they're doing with what was CBS Radio, now Entercom. But they have at least now taken operation in Boston under an LMA of Entercom's WRKO 680. And they have put 1430 WKOX and Everett into a trust, which is going to be trying to sell that small AM signal. And that presumably means that we're going to start seeing some fairly big changes coming in programming. One of the things, of course, that we've been anticipating from the start of this is that it is very likely that at least some of the syndicated talkers who have been on 1430 because it was the only place that Premier could put them in Boston will be migrating over to WRKO. It would be no surprise at all, in particular if sooner rather than later we see Rush Limbaugh back on WRKO, which would, I think, be the third go-around now if you're keeping score on that one at home. And then, of course, the question, who's going to end up with 1430 in Boston? And that's kind of tied into the whole story of WMEX that we're going to be talking about in a moment. The HD radio subchannels have been shifting in Boston pretty quickly. iHeart has now completely reshuffled its HD lineup. WRKO is now being heard on the HD2 of WZLX 100.7. WBZ, which they took operation of course, in November, is now back on FMHD on the WXKS-FM 107.9 HD2. And then they have resurrected the Evolution dance format that lived for a while on 101.7. It's now on 101.7 HD2. That apparently had been running a 1430 simulcast at one point, thanks to Jeff Lehman for pointing that one out. I hadn't even noticed that that one was on there. Meanwhile, now that the swap has also been completed between Beasley and Entercom for WMJX, which has now gone over to Entercom, and for WBZ-FM, the sports hub, which is now fully in the hands of Beasley, we have seen some changes with some of the HDs there as well, and in particular on 98.5, instead of Rock, that had been one of the last holdovers from the old era of WBCN, that had been on 100.7 HD2, that is now, or 98.7 HD2, rather. It gets confusing. There was a different WBCN-related format that had been on 100.7. The one that had been on 98.5 is gone now. That has, for the moment at least, been replaced by a loop of podcast segments that are repeats of the main programming from the Sports Hub on 98.5. So expect some more shifting to be going on there, I would expect, in the weeks and the months to come. 106.7 HD2, as far as I know, is still carrying the regular Magic AC programming that gets temporarily displaced from the main WMJX signal because of Christmas music. It'll be interesting to see when the Christmas music disappears from 106.7 next week, whether the full-time Christmas format then goes back to 106.7 HD2 or whether Entercom has something else in mind there. They, of course, have a few sort of stock formats that they put on some of their HDs around the country. If you're a fan of blues music, they do a format called the Delta that shows up on a lot of their stations. We'll see if that perhaps finds a home in Boston. So lots shifting around there. Before we continue on with the stories about WMEX and KQV, a reminder that it is still not too late to have a brand new calendar on your wall before the new year gets underway. If you order right now at fivebush.com, you can still get your hands on a 2018 Tower Site calendar, and we will ship it to you so you have it before the new year. So place that order now. You can start your new year with a brand new calendar on your wall, and you can support what we do here at Five Bush.
It's Sandy time.
Wow. Beauty, brains, and a complete psycho, my dream girl.
617-237-1234. The number here is 617-237-1234. This is Sandy Shack. This is the Sandy Shack Show here at 1510 WMEX. My text number, 67076. Start your message with the keyword Sandy.
So that was something that nobody in Boston has heard on the radio in a few months. That was WMEX on 1510 with its now-defunct talk format. That recording actually was made when we were in Boston last New Year's Eve, waiting for the whole NBC swap to go down. But for the last few months, 1510 in Boston has been silent while it's been awaiting a new owner. And, of course, as you know, if you've been following anything in the trades, whether it's Northeast Radio Watch, Radio Insight, anywhere else, you know that there was a big auction that was scheduled to wrap up last Friday for the assets of WMEX 1510. Daily XXL had been the last owner. They had paid $175,000 for the station. They were looking for a minimum bid of $300,000, and on top of that, as you've probably read, they were looking for a buyer who was willing to continue in the lease with the transmitter site that they did not own in Waltham. That was an expensive lease. That was a very expensive lease, $12,000 a month, then another $6,000 or so a month to power the 50,000-watt transmitter, added into all the expenses of restarting the station, putting a new studio on the air, et cetera, et cetera. So they were looking for a buyer at auction. They didn't get a buyer at auction, but they did get a deal anyway. It took a couple of days for all the details to emerge. But it appears that Daily XXL had been negotiating separately with one of the better-known names in the smaller markets around Boston, Ed Perry. Ed, of course, has been a broadcaster now for well over half a century. He's been running WATD in Marshfield at 95.9 FM for over 40 years now. And he's also been in and out of the AM game. He had 1410 in Brockton for a while, and then recently he bought 1460 in Brockton and has been running that off of a long wire while he gets a new transmitter site set up for that. And he's got a translator that he had purchased to move there that'll be on 101.1, serving the greater Brockton area. And now it turns out that Ed is adding a second AM station. He has struck a deal reportedly for $125,000 to purchase the license of WMEX. Apparently, that's all that he's getting. The programming, of course, is gone. The transmitter site apparently not included in this deal, and so it's still not clear who is going to have to bear what will be a fairly considerable expense of taking that transmitter site down if it's not going to be used anymore, if those towers aren't just going to sit there along Waverly Oaks Road. But in the meantime, Ed's going to have to figure out where do you put 1510 now. So let's answer a couple of questions that have come up, because these things have been sort of swirling around the message boards. There's been a lot of confusion. Let's answer some of these questions here. First of all, where could you put 1510? The FCC in some ways has made Ed's job a little bit easier with some of their more recent rulings regarding AM improvement. If 1510 is to remain as a Boston-licensed radio station, it no longer has to be able to make a showing that its 5 millivolt contour encompasses most of the city of Boston. Those rules changed, and you can now have a station that is licensed to Boston where if you make a showing that a suitable transmitter site wasn't available anymore, he can power it down considerably. He can probably go less directional or non-directional during the day. I've seen some estimates that say that he could do 5,000 watts or 10,000 watts. We'll see what the engineering really looks like. But it should be possible to keep a fairly decent daytime signal on 1510 in Boston. It helps, certainly, that one of the stations that had to be protected from the Waltham site, which was WNLC in New London, Connecticut on 1510, they're gone. They're out of the picture. No need to worry about them anymore. There had always been incoming interference, even in some cases during the day, from 1510 CJRS up in Sherbrooke, Quebec. That station's been off the air for a long time now. That's not really a consideration, at least in terms of real-world incoming interference. So during the day, you could move that station to a lot of different places. You could diplex it on an existing AM tower. Apparently, it looks like Ed perhaps is looking south of the city. You could put it maybe on the 1260 towers that are down in Quincy, not far from where 1510 used to be. You might even be able to put it diplexed with 1300 in Quincy itself. That itself is not a problem. It's nighttime where things get difficult, because on 1510, there is one major protection that still has to be observed, and that is the very, very sharp protection to the Class A station on 1510, which is WLAC in Nashville, Tennessee. Now, there are proposals that are out there that the FCC is considering right now that would significantly reduce the amount of nighttime protection the Class A stations get from SkyWave that could conceivably really help a WMEX in order to improve its nighttime signal at the expense of some more incoming interference into Nashville. But those aren't law yet. So right now you got to deal with what's really out there. The speculation that's out there right now is that whatever the new 1510 ends up looking like, probably there won't be very much of it at night. It will probably be a very limited signal. Probably it'll drop down to a Class D, so well under 250 watts at night. If you're not looking right at the tower, you may have trouble seeing it. Will it still be useful? Yeah, to some people. I mean, it's still a densely populated signal. If you put the tower in the right place, you can hit people at night with a signal, even on a frequency that's dominated by a Class A somewhere else. And if you don't believe me, go ask Bob Bittner about WJIB with its mighty 5 watts on 740 and how well that does, surprisingly enough, at night. So it's not impossible to do. That's one piece of the puzzle. Another piece of the puzzle then becomes, okay, can your city of license still be Boston if you don't cover Boston at night? And here's where downgrading to Class D actually becomes an advantage, because Class D stations have no requirement for nighttime city of license coverage, because their nighttime coverage is always considered secondary anyway. And so if you can find a site where you can still cover most of Boston during the day and you don't hit much of it at all at night, if you're a Class D, that doesn't matter. You can still be licensed to Boston. If you remain Class B somehow, if you could still do 250 or 300 watts at night or whatever, you can still change the city of license. It's not terribly critical in this case, because WMEX is one of many, many radio stations that are licensed to Boston. It's not the first licensed local service there. And so if you move it out of Boston to somewhere else, you're not reducing the amount of local service that's provided to Boston in any substantial way. And so the FCC wouldn't blink if an application went in that said, hey, we're going to relicense this, and it's now going to be licensed to Braintree. It's now going to be licensed to Quincy. It's now going to be licensed to Dedham, what have you. As long as it's a licensable community, the FCC will probably approve that without any problem. And, of course, in Ed Perry, you have the advantage of somebody who knows how to do these things. So that's one piece of it. What about a translator? Well, here's where we get into the next translator window that opens up at the end of January. What's going to happen on that last week of January from the 24th to the 31st is that the FCC will have one last free-for-all window, and any AM station of any class that has not participated in any of the previous AM improvement windows. So if they bought a translator and moved it in from up to 250 miles away, they're out of the picture. If they applied for a brand new translator in the window that opened last summer, they're no longer in the picture and can't apply anymore. And it doesn't matter if they were successful in either of those cases. If you applied last summer and you got MX'd out of the picture, so for instance, 1230 up in Nahant, WESX, the former Salem AM station that's now broadcasting from the WLYN tower in Lynn, they applied for 92.1. They ended up in a mutually exclusive situation for that frequency. They withdrew their application, and my understanding of the rules says that means they are now out of the picture for the next one. But there are still plenty of other AM stations that did not participate in those moves that could, in theory, apply if they can find frequencies that are available. Boston is a pretty crowded place to try to put an FM translator right now. Some of the last of those frequencies got filled up in this last window. We're now seeing right now the very last of the long-form applications coming in from the stations that applied. So, for instance, here was one that really kind of took the long game. Alex Langer had bought 1410 in Brockton, the old WMSX, had moved it up to Reedville, licensed to Dedham, transmitter in the Reedville section of Hyde Park, on 1410. It's not much of an AM signal. Everybody knows it's not much of an AM signal where it is off a little Velcom whip, but it was eligible to put a translator anywhere within 25 miles of that. He applied for 98.9 and now has an application in for 250 directional watts on 98.9, aimed mostly eastward from the towers up in Medford, up above the hospital there, up where 1017 is. And so there will be a translator on 98.9 there relaying WZBR out of Dedham, and it'll be interesting to see what more Alex Langer does with that once that's granted. But are there other opportunities to do that? There are not a lot of frequencies still available, and whoever applies is not likely to end up as a singleton. So just applying in this case isn't necessarily enough. You have to then be able to survive this process of negotiating with other applicants to see if one of you can move out of the way, if you can buy out the other applicant and somehow get them to go away. And if nobody budges, then it ends up going to auction. We don't know yet exactly how many of these are going to auction from this last window. I bet you there are going to be more out of this next window. So there are no certainties in any of this process. There's no guarantee that just because you're sitting on an AM station that could have a translator, if it doesn't yet, there's no guarantee that you're going to get it. By way of disclaimer, as you know, this is one of the things that I do here through Flybush Media, is to help translator applicants navigate this process. So I'm not entirely a neutral party on this. Don't take me as one. Having said that, I have absolutely no dog right now in the hunt for Boston going into the next window. So we will see what happens with that. What do you do to program it? That's another question. It sounds like from everything that Ed is saying that he's not going to try to make this a standalone Boston station. That way kind of lies madness when you are competing against behemoths like iHeart and Entercom and Beasley. So what else do you do with it? It sounds like he's going to try to focus it more on the South Shore and try to kind of super serve more parts of the South Shore beyond the area that he already serves with WATD. He's making it sound like he's going to have some music on there, like he's going to have some local air talent on there. And again, Ed Perry is one of these guys that you don't want to bet against, because he's one of these guys who's done really well doing this. WATD has always been a model for how local radio can be done well. So I'm certainly not betting against him. I would advise you not to bet against him either. And it's going to be very interesting to see what he does with that. We're going to be following it closely. Hopefully we can get him on the podcast here as things become more official and have a chat with him about where things are going with that. Back in a moment with a story of another venerable AM station that at one point looked like we weren't sure if it was going to survive past 2017 at all.
KQV Skywatch Weather Center.
36 at Pittsburgh International, 37 downtown.
All news, all the time. You're tuned to AM 1410, KQV Pittsburgh, and worldwide at KQV.com. Give us 22 minutes, we'll give you the world.
ABC News brought to you by VenangoTrails.com.
From ABC News. I'm Scott Goldberg.
That was audio developing story from about a year and a half, 2 years ago, from KQV in Pittsburgh. And it doesn't really matter whether that audio was super recent or whether it was something that we had recorded 15 or 20 years ago. It would have sounded about the same, because KQV in Pittsburgh really hasn't changed that much in a lot of years. KQV, of course, is a station that has a wonderful, vibrant history. You can argue whether or not it really signed on in 1919, as they claim. It has sort of this dotted line connection to an amateur station called 8ZAE that existed as early as 1919 and was owned by an electrical supply company in Pittsburgh. We know the actual license that became KQV dates at least to 1921, which still makes it incredibly old as radio stations go. One of the great mysteries in American radio history is that nobody really knows how that KQV call sign, which is very non-standard, came to show up on a radio station in Pittsburgh in 1921. Be that as it may, KQV survived over the years. It ended up in the years before World War II as part of a duopoly back when, in the early days of duopoly, with another station called WJAS. Got split apart when the duopoly rules ended. Ended up eventually in the hands of ABC, which owned it through the 50s and 60s, and was a top 40 jumping off point for a lot of people who went on to bigger ABC owned top 40 stations when that company was one of the really dominant players in the industry. So there were a lot of people who came through the ABC era of top 40 at KQV It was a neat radio station. It holds a very fond place in the hearts of listeners, not only in Pittsburgh, but people have been exposed to it through air checks over the years in other places, too. Ended up in the hands of Taft Broadcasting after about a year, continuing the Top 40 format under Taft. KQV AM got sold off separately from its FM, which was equally legendary as WDVE, and is still one of the big rock stations in Pittsburgh. KQV AM ended up in the hands of a company that was owned by its general manager, Bob Dickey Sr., and was also half-owned by Richard Mellon Scaife, the newspaper publisher who owned the Tribune Review over in Greensburg and has been a pretty major force in media and politics in southwestern Pennsylvania. It became an all-news station under Taft. It stayed all-news under the Dickies, and they just really kept this thing going, kind of flying under the radar for over 40 years, just kind of chugging along, doing what it does. It's not a high-profile station, even in Pittsburgh. Its ratings have hovered kind of down towards the bottom of the pack for many years. Never really made a lot of money. It appears for a lot of years it never really lost a lot of money either until fairly recently. It had a signal, one of these signals that just didn't quite keep up with the pace of growth of the market itself. And it's another interesting thing about a station that's that old, because most stations that were that old managed to do one of two things for themselves over the years. Either they got themselves onto a 50,000-watt clear channel frequency and stayed dominant like the other old station in Pittsburgh, KDKA, or they at least managed to get themselves onto a decent low-on-the-dial regional channel and to get there early enough that they weren't heavily directional. So that happened, for instance, with another early station, WCAE in Pittsburgh, which became WTAE and which had an AM pattern that more or less kept up with the growth of the market for quite a while until finally it didn't. And then after the war, another station that had been around for a while, WWSW, had been on 1500. They got on 970 with a very directional pattern from north of the market. Somehow that's where KQV ended up also. They stayed near the top of the dial. They were on 1380 before the big Narva shuffle of 1941. Their big channel-sharing partner at the time was a few hundred miles to the west in Dayton, Ohio, a station that became Wing, W-I-N-G. They're both still on 1410. They both still have fairly deep mutual nulls to the east and west, protecting each other. And somehow KQV ended up with a whole bunch of other stuff on 1410 over the years in and around it that just really limited its ability to do anything more than shoot a strong lobe south from its site on the north side of Pittsburgh down into downtown Pittsburgh. But its signal never got out to the suburbs, and that really started to hamper it later on. Another thing that started to happen later on was that if you are trying to shoot something south into Pittsburgh, you go up in the north end, on the hills on the north side of the city. Well, guess what? That became prime development territory in the 60s and 70s, and especially into the 80s and 90s. And so the piece of land where KQV's five towers sit all of a sudden is believed to be worth an awful lot more than the radio station that sat there. So in some sense, it was just a matter of time until all of this went down. And then you started to get more runs of bad luck for KQV. Richard Mellon Scaife sold off his interest in the station to the Dickey family in 2013, pulled away from his interest in it. By that point, Bob Dickey Sr. had already died. And then really kind of the final blow to all of this, Cheryl Scott, who was Bob Dickey Sr.'s daughter and who co-owned the station with her brother, Bob Dickey Jr., unfortunately and very sadly, she died very young in November. She had been the business manager of the station. By all accounts, she really had kind of been the primary driver, keeping this thing going for all of these years. Some other people who had been very instrumental behind the scenes in keeping the station going, like my good friend Frank Gottlieb, who died a couple of years ago, had left. And so all of this kind of contributed to a point where everybody sort of knew something was going to happen to KQV. Having said that, it was still a shock last Friday when the news started to spread very quickly that, hey, they're going to turn this thing off at the end of the year if they can't find any buyers, because that's just a couple of weeks away at this point. But the understanding from what the Dickey family is saying is that they don't want to do any format other than news on there. They don't believe that they can keep sustaining the losses that they've been taking with news, and so they are prepared at this point to shut it down if a buyer doesn't surface. It looks from all indications like there could actually be two separate pieces to this sale. As with WMEX in Boston, the transmitter site and the facility are probably going to end up in separate hands. That transmitter site, again, could be worth into the millions of dollars up there, and will probably be sold away from the radio station, which raises the question, what do you do then if you're somebody who wants to buy that AM station? Where can you put it? It's that same kind of problem that WMEX faces. It's pretty easy to do something that will work pretty well during the daytime in Pittsburgh without having to be too directional. You might even be able to open up a little bit more than KQV had been. I don't think a lot of attention had been paid to trying to improve that allocation in recent years. But the nighttime, again, really becomes the killer there. Can you get a translator into Pittsburgh? Yet again, you're up against that same problem that that you're potentially up against in Boston. Again, my disclaimer, I've been involved in some previous translator issues in Pittsburgh. I'm not currently involved in this one, but looking at it from the outside, there are not a lot of frequencies left and still potentially some stations contending for them. So what do you do now if your aim is to save KQV? Well, one of the things that's working in KQV's factor, maybe even more so than MEX, is simply the factor of nostalgia. Pittsburgh is one of those markets where people stay put, where there are still memories of KQV's glory days among at least some older listeners. Not to minimize the nostalgia factor for WMEX either. One of the things that Ed Perry said in his statement when he bought it was that he remembered listening to the old WMEX growing up when he was a kid in Natick, which, by the way, means he was probably a pretty decent DXer because that signal didn't get that far west very well back in those days. But KQV has a lot of people in town who remember it, who love it, and who would love to try to see some form of it still be saved. Can they put together a deal that can save it? Can they find a way to relocate it somewhere where it can still function? And again, that question of can they attach a translator to it, if that, in fact, is what it needs to survive. These are all things that we are going to be looking at as we head into 2018. Thanks for being with us during 2017. It's been a fun first year of this podcast. It started out over the summer, driving back up through the Catskills, recording in the car as we went, sort of a pilot edition. Appreciate all the nice things people have said about the podcast. Looking forward to much more for you as we head into 2018. So Happy New Year, Merry Christmas. Thanks for listening. Again, your comments are always welcome. You can post them here in the comments on the page if you're listening at fivebush.com. You can email me at scott@fivebush.com. Once again, we are brought to you by the Tower Site Calendar, still available at fivebush.com at the store, and by Fivebush Media, helping broadcasters make their signals better since 1994. Thanks so much for listening. Happy New Year, back in 2018 with much more on the Top of the Tower.
Hey, wake up, get up, what the whole